Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, no, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil. What's happening?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the podcast so popular they made a sequel. This is Extras and Epilogues on the Podzilla 1985 Network. My name is Shannon Young. I'll be your host. Well, I'll sort of be your host. I'll be your intro speaker. And introducing your actual host for the evening. First off, our special guest for the evening. You may remember him from the sports show on the Podzilla 1985 Network. Currently the DM, GM, and all other things in control over on PZ85 Plays. It's Mr. Cody Sandusky.
See, I'm glad you said that because I was going to say the sports show is the only reason they would remember me, not for Curse of Strahd.
Oh.
It's firmly in the ditch of Barovia. It's perfectly fine.
Every time I tell anybody that, yeah, you know, I do play tabletop. Right now we're running Curse of Strahd. Their eyes always get real big and they get super excited and go, "Ooh, have fun with that." And I'm like, and you can have fun listening to it at Podzilla1985.com. Also with us tonight,
or your favorite podcasting service.
Except for Truth Social. You can't find us there, probably.
It's not there.
Not there. It's not there. Also with us tonight, last week my co-host, this week your host, Double H, Hunter Hendricks.
Hey there, Shannon. What's happening?
Well, I wouldn't say I missed it. Wait. Shit. That was early. I'm sorry. Hunter, we had such a good time last week talking about Evil Dead Rise with really Tanner. Good. We decided to do it again. We were going to make this show maybe monthly or every 2 weeks, but we had so much fun. We wanted to do another one. The only bad part of this is I am not feeling great. So graciously taken on the role of host tonight for the show.
Yeah, no. So last week, first of all, like Shannon said, we had a really, really great episode with Tanner where we covered Evil Dead Rise. And if you have not listened to that, again, Podzilla1985.com, you can go back and check it out. Our pilot episode, you might call it. At the end of that episode, I talked a little bit about a book that I've been reading by Brian Rafferty called Best Movie Year Ever, where Brian basically posits that 1999 is the best year in film history in terms of innovation and overall variety of films and the people who were making them and starring in them. There's a lot of arguments for different years, but 99 was his. And by the end of the book, you know, I tend to agree to a certain degree. So I made a list that's actually his list, and then added a few things and said I'd love to cover, you know, some of these, if not sequentially, on the show, you know, over the course of our run. And that actually made it easier to do this more often because those are movies that are really accessible for the most part, things that are fairly easy to find. So Shannon surprised me at the end of the show last week, said, "You pick, what are we doing next week?" And I took a glance at the list. My first thought was to do the Blair Witch Project, which we will cover at some point.
Oh yeah.
But to give Tanner a break, we decided that, because of course he's very busy now, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that tomorrow night. We decided to do something a little funnier. I went for Office Space, and immediately we both went, and Cody will be our guest for Mike Judge's live action debut. So yeah, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about Office Space, which of course released on February 19th of 1999, so it was pretty early in that year. Mike Judge both directed and wrote it. Now this is something that was true of our film last week as well when we talked about Evil Dead Rise, the same writer and same director, Lee Cronin. But Mike Judge, better known perhaps for Beavis and Butthead, of course, was his big contribution to pop culture in the 90s. King of the Hill comes right on the heels of that. Mike Judge, not known for a lot of live action at that time, but he was cultivating some really, really funny people that he could bring into that realm. Ron Livingston stars. Cody, I don't know about you, but Ron Livingston at that time, as I recall, was not like a huge star, not a super well-known guy.
No, that was part of the problem that the studio had in trying to get this movie spun up, is that they wanted someone with name right. recognition. It is in a great Ringer article, oral history about it. Can you picture this film with Matt Damon or Ben Affleck as Peter Gibbons?
No. And that's the thing that really gets me is that it doesn't work that way. Now, they got their star. Jennifer Aniston signed on, and she basically was the person who kind of saved it at that point in terms of pleasing the studio and having a name. Of course, Jennifer Aniston was highly attached to Friends at that time as Rachel, Rachel Green. But to be fair, they also had Stephen Root and Gary Cole already in the cast.
Yeah.
Maybe not household names, but these are guys who are just industry titans in terms of character actors and people who can come onto a set and just make anything they do top notch. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really well-rounded cast, which I'm sure we'll talk out more as this goes on. The quick summary about the movie, in case you've never seen it or know nothing about it, a one-sentence summary goes like this. Three company workers who hate their jobs decide to rebel against their greedy boss. That is literally as blank slate as I can get it for you, because there's so much more happening in this movie. And as Cody and I were talking about before we came in here, this is not a long film. Comedies, especially leading up to the 90s, the boilerplate sort of standard length was about an hour and a half. And sure enough, 89 minutes, it clocks in right there. You got to imagine there was quite a bit that was cut to get them to kind of that standard time for that.
Which is fantastic in terms of that, because it doesn't feel like anything is lost in the movie.
No.
We were talking about it. We'll get into it in a little bit, that the film kind of shifts halfway through to that revenge plot you talk about. The first half of the movie doesn't have that feel, but
totally
even
different.
It's a non sequitur in terms of like what you would consider traditional writing, but you don't lose anything in that. And it's just clean, it's quick. Apparently, a lot of the riffing and improv by John C. McGinley is one of the Bobs we're taking out, and it's probably not a bad idea, because I love them just as much as they are in that movie.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill, of course, being Mike Judge's kind of segue into this movie and then his future career. But previously, prior to that, he had created a couple of shorts that were actually, it says Milton, but they were called Milton's Office Space, which is where the title of the movie came from. So in 91, Mike Judge had been coming off of actually working some office jobs, some cubicle farm type jobs. And one of the guys he had worked with had sort of complained about, if they move my desk again, I'm going to quit. I'm going to blow the place up. I'm going to lose my mind. And he, as I recall, basically thought to himself, no, you're not, but that's very funny. And I'm going to do something with that. And so he did. He created with his own camera this little animated series of shorts. It was just one film, and then it became several others that aired on MTV and on Comedy Central early in its run as a cable network, about this squirrely, mousy guy, Milton, whose boss kind of runs all over him and moves his desk and tells him to do stuff he doesn't want to do. And, I mean, you see that in live action, almost shot for shot, with Stephen Root and Gary Cole's characters as Milton and then Bill Lumberg. But, again, they're not the stars of the movie. That's the thing, is that there was no way, you know, people were practically throwing money at Mike Judge to get him to make something, but he was telling them, I can't make a movie out of Milton. Milton's not a movie. I can use him as part of a movie, which is what ultimately happened and why we ended up getting the plot with Ron Livingston's character, Peter, and the other characters of Michael Bolton, which will never not make me laugh.
Yep.
And Samir. Some things to know about this movie in case you've never seen it, just some things to take away. One of the most famous quotes from the movie, or most famous scenarios, PC load letter coming up on the copier that Michael Bolton gets pissed off about. You know, what the fuck is that? PC load letter. Not scripted. David Herman, the guy who played Michael Bolton, had more lines to say at that time to Peter, but the photocopier actually jammed. And he didn't understand what the error message was. So he says this out loud, and they go, that's perfect. Just leave it there. Cody, as you and I have talked about numerous times when it comes to this movie, it's the people and the equipment are almost equal level stars, right?
Oh, yeah.
Between that scene and obviously the most famous scene from the movie, the three of them just beating the absolute hell out of that same piece of machinery in a field set to the Ghetto Boys still, is just one of the most iconic scenes from the 90s. Do you remember the first time you saw that?
Oh, yeah. I was been in see, it would have been junior high or high school, because it would have been a Comedy Central showing, because, of course, that's where, as we'll get to, this film made its hay, was being shown on TV and selling DVDs. And as a young computer aficionado, I wasn't in the IT career that I'm in now, but seeing that, one, has rang through the ages any time I work on a printer. And yes, unfortunately, it is the bane of every person's existence in IT. The song plays in my head, and I have envisioned many times. I even did it 3 weeks ago working on a label printer. Joked with my coworker, I have no window, but I got a nice big garage door I can chuck this piece of shit out of, and I'm going to do it.
But Shannon, do you remember?
Burns your head.
Shannon, do you remember the first time that you saw the scene where the guys take the printer out into the field and beat it to death?
Yeah, I it's a little strange. I remember it because at that time period, I was really deep into the rap scene and hip-hop culture. I still am to an extent, but back then especially. And I just, my friends showed me that scene because they were like, you want to see the hardest scene you've ever watched, you know, because I, back in those days, growing up, I didn't get to watch a lot of movies that I wanted to watch. A lot of movies that my friends wanted to watch, and because my friends were people like Jeff, who is not in jail, surprisingly, right now.
Hey, did you check the website?
Are
you
sure?
We watched a lot of things like Scarface and Juice, and he lived that gangster mentality, right? That's probably why he's been in jail so many times. So. That scene especially as a mockery of just that style. You wouldn't expect to see a song like that with a scene like that, and I thought it was hilarious and still one of my favorite scenes of all time.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole movie is kind of scored that way. Cody, that might have been what you were kind of getting toward, is that Mike Judge really wanted this to be like a celebration in a lot of ways of hip-hop and rap culture in the 90s. The studio hated it. Fox Searchlight was telling him, this is not going to work. We want these scenes to be funny. And he's like, that's what makes them funny.
Yeah, the juxtaposition does it. I referenced it a little bit ago, an oral history on The Ringer. And I had read this in other places as well. They did a focus group. And Mike Judge, in hindsight, says it was a bad decision to do this, but had told the heads of Fox, whatever this group says, if they don't like the hip-hop, we'll excise it from the film.
Yeah.
To a person, every one of them said that's what makes it funny. These bunch of nerds beating up a piece of office equipment to die, motherfucker, still.
And it's brilliant.
It works.
It's brilliant.
It works. And you have Ice Cube, you have Scarface. Shannon said, mid-90s gangster rap bleeds that entire thing. And it, for a Michael Bolton to be the one that has a Snoop Doggy Dogg poster in his cubicle, it's perfect. It screams absurd.
Remind me, the song he's listening to in the car at the very beginning, it's Tupac, right? Because I distinctly remember the line, I can't talk to my mother, so I talk to my diary. But he only plays that after he briefly turns it down and locks his doors, you know, when a black man passes his car. I love that they flower these guys up as they're not heroes, right? None of these guys are meant to be like celebrated in any big way. They're still the same nerds that you're working, you know, across the hallway from in the next cubicle over. Speaking of Michael Bolton, this was one of the other little kind of tidbits I wanted to mention of interesting facts. As of 5 years ago, close to 5 years ago, October 2018, the term ass clown officially entered into Webster's dictionary. Now, this is, I wrote it one way here, but this is kind of interesting. The fact that I found originally said that Mike Judge was credited for first using it in the movie. You know, he wrote the movie, he wrote it in the script, therefore he's the first person to, you know, officially popularize that.
Right.
But I've seen other stories that say that no, it was David Herman. It was the guy who played Michael Bolton who made that up in the moment, because he uses it in reference to Michael Bolton, the singer. He says, you know, why should I have to be compared to that no talent ass clown? The original line supposedly was to that no singing asshole. And he went, well, that doesn't make any sense. It makes it sound like he doesn't sing. He does sing. That's the whole thing. That's why I hate him.
Right.
So he changed it, and somehow asshole became ass clown, and they went, no, that's perfect. Just run with it.
And who could hate Michael Bolton also? That's the only part of that's right. The only flaw in this film.
He just hates him so much. Something I read coming out of that I really enjoy is that the real Michael Bolton has since said he's seen the movie, he thought it was funny, that he's glad that it's someone like him who has a good sense of humor about it, who can appreciate what was happening and then not, you know, be offended. He said he has signed numerous copies of the Office Space DVD, like when he had autograph signings, and then he always signs it the real Michael Bolton,
right?
which is pretty great. I think that's pretty good. I'm not, we, you know, again, we don't really go through and recap the entire movie. The idea is that if you're coming into this, you're understanding, you're getting spoilers and all that, so you have seen the film. If you haven't, this would be a great time to pause it and go watch it. It's on Max. You can access it through Hulu as well, possibly. We haven't confirmed that. I've both, so I can't tell you how that works. But it's not a long film. It's a great film, in my opinion, which is what we're going to kind of talk about next. So if you haven't watched it, go do that and then come back. I don't know about you guys, but I remember, so I didn't actually say when I first saw that scene. It would be when I first saw the movie, which would have been in college. So this movie came out in 99. There's no way I saw it before 2003. And to be fair, basically nobody else did either, right? As compared to last week's movie, Evil Dead Rise cost almost nothing and made a ton of money. This was not the case for Office Space when it comes to the box office. $10 million budget, but then it only made $12 million worldwide. And you got to remember that when budget numbers are reported, generally that does not include marketing.
Right.
So anything they paid to market this movie, which of course was also a bungled situation.
Nothing.
Yeah, did not play into that, meaning it probably lost money in the theaters. But it was one of the first movies to really blow, or movies, not monies, one of the first movies to really blow up on home video. Once the DVD was released, it sold a ton of copies. It became a staple of that really late 90s, early 2000s DVD culture. And so, yeah, it was when I got into college and then subsequently on Comedy Central, once it was licensed to that over and over and over, that I saw it for the first time and probably for the first 50 times. When I went to Southeast for college, I distinctly remember my freshman year, we had a guy who lived on our floor who was just kind of known for, his door was never closed. He was always watching a movie. It was always something good. And I'm talking about 24/7. And if you were walking by and you wanted to pop in and watch, it was like a no pay movie theater. On rotation regularly were things like Pirates of the Caribbean had just come out. This is where I first saw Super Troopers. So he had pretty great comedy repertoire, because it was that. I remember the main three comedies that were on rotation were Super Troopers, Friday, and Office Space. Two of which I had not seen. I'd seen Friday coming into that.
Right.
But I had not seen Office Space either. And for whatever reason, as much as I love those other movies, this one really just kind of captivated me because it's so normal. I mean, again, at that time, none of us really had that experience of working in an office, the mundane, you know, basic, boring day to day, and not being able to be satisfied with that. But something about that was just really, it drew me in. And so it was one of those movies that from that point forward, anytime it showed up on Comedy Central, I'm going to sit down and watch it. I'm going to sit down and watch what's left of it. I'm going to throw it on in the background while I'm doing something. Cody, just generally, what are your thoughts on this movie? When you think about Office Space, what do you think about?
My life and career to this point, probably my future career. I mean, let's be real honest about it. The secret day job doesn't come up, but I don't shy away from the fact. Hey, Shannon. I said soundboard hit.
A little late.
I do information technology for a career. So even in the best of places, this movie speaks to it. You know, a lot of people reference IT Crowd in terms of how that gets to the droning mundane of people who are socially awkward and don't know how to handle the higher-ups. This movie does it better because it's corporate America stealing your soul bit by bit, day after day, and not knowing what you're doing. I make it sound miserable, and in some cases it is, but there are actual places I have worked where this exists. I worked for both of my medical IT career jobs before where I'm at now. This was it. Just farm cubicle walls everywhere, painted like the bleakest beige or the lightest gray. No personality. Someone listening to a radio too loud. Someone who's too cheery on the phone for their own fucking good. It just speaks to just all of that. That's why I love it so much, because it's very relatable in terms of that career. But I also think for just anybody who's been in an office or has been in a dead end job that just has that feeling, that just gnawing at your soul, like, if I just cut loose, I could do something really weird or do something really fun. And also, just not doing anything sounds great.
Yeah, as someone who is a noted fan of the television show, The Office does not in any way accurately represent what it's like to work in an office. No. Right? It's funny because they use a very mundane setting to do crazy things. Only a little bit of Office Space is that way. And that's, we were talking about the marketing earlier. That's one of the things that really comes back to why I think, and most people tend to agree, it didn't do well at the box office. You know, it's got a 6.8 out of 10 in terms of positive critic reviews. If you're going to look at the numbers on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic's got it at a 68, which is basically the exact same deal. And then the cinema score for audiences is like right down the middle at a C+. I have to imagine there's a strong dichotomy there between people who saw it in the theater and went, this is not for me, versus people who picked up on it on DVD or, you know, walked into somebody's dorm room at 3 a.m. and they had it playing. It was on Comedy Central. When this movie came out, Fox Searchlight had desperately wanted Mike Judge to do something. Then he did something. And they went, well, not like that. So they didn't know how to market the thing. Famously, Mike Judge hates the poster, which is also the DVD cover, only slightly altered. The original poster is that iconic image of the guy covered in yellow Post-its, and all you can see is his glasses and his briefcase, with the tagline, the worst tagline, "Work sucks." It's so generic. And it just does nothing. Oh, yeah, right. I mean, and then that's you got Blink-182 comes along like 5 seconds afterward and ties right into that. But it did nothing to sell that movie. Mike Judge fought to change it to some degree, and they acquiesced to a little bit on the DVD release. Milton is like peeking out from behind the guy, so it at least ties it to the story somehow. But the trailers did nothing to sell it as anything other than a zany comedy, which it isn't. The marketing was not there to promote it very big. Jennifer Aniston was spending more time promoting Friends than this. You know, Fox had said they wanted a big star, and then they didn't send her on anything to really sell the movie. So, of course, in the theaters, it got creamed because nobody knew what they were getting. Even people who went to see it randomly, if they liked it, still would not have probably sold it as a comedy. It's funny, but it's funny in a very bleak sort of... it's not dark humor or black humor, but it is definitely somewhere on the line, right? Yeah. I mean, it's this stuff is funny because it's awful.
I actually think it came out at the perfect time to become the classic that it is. I think if it would have come out later, like if it came out today, it wouldn't be nearly as special because everybody is already so nihilistic and movies are already so bleak again. But back then, like you said, it was kind of a diamond in the rough. There wasn't anything like it out there, and it really set the tone for indie films that were coming out around that time period and after.
And especially because it was that late 90s movement, right? I mean, it was 1999. Nobody knew. Peter even references, I think he only calls it the Millennium Switchover or something. He never
said the 2000 Switchover, yeah.
So he never says, you know, Y2K and all that, but it was right at that time when, and this is a big part of the reason that it's included in the book, that people were coming out of one of the strongest decades, especially of American prosperity in American history, right? The 90s to 2000 were one of those economic booms. Everyone had money. They were spending money. But there was concern that it wasn't going to last. And sure enough, this is basically the crux of the movie. I mean, the first half of that movie, anyway, as we've talked about a couple times, is strictly just a guy who can't be satisfied with the basic boring things that he's got. And then he gets an opportunity to get out of that, and he does. Now, the second half is a little bit different.
Right.
But it really was a showcase, like you said, for that kind of nihilistic humor of everything sucks, and I don't really know why. I can't even really explain why, other than I just don't like the things that I'm doing. They're not creatively fulfilling. Again, that was just a microcosm of the 90s. People were going, well, I've got money, and I have a secure job. And, you know, at the beginning, Peter even says, like, he has a girlfriend, but he thinks that she's cheating on him, which everyone agrees. Yeah. They don't even think anything of it. They don't think it's a big deal because, again, it's just, you know, that's the way of the world. And he wants more out of it. I mean, this is the 90s. Screaming out from film of, you know, filmmakers and actors at the time who were going, I can keep doing the same stuff I've been doing forever, but I don't want to do that. I want to do something different. I want to do something interesting. Mike Judge wanted to do something that wasn't animation. Jennifer Aniston wanted to not be Rachel Green from Friends for her entire career. So it really is.
Still is.
Yeah, I was going to say,
30 years later.
This movie was not the thing that broke her out of it. In fact, I remember we rewatched the movie on Sunday just to have it fresh in my mind. And I'm watching it going, she doesn't even really do anything different than Rachel other than say fuck a couple of times.
Yeah, flip like, people off. And even then, she would do that in the show.
Right, yeah. This is a person who, at that time, I don't think really was trying to be anything other than that. And to be fair, she knew where her bread was buttered. I think that really goes back to the whole theme of it, of you could try to get away from it. But I mean, even in the movie, she leaves one restaurant job and goes to work at another one.
Yep.
Everybody but Peter ends up in the exact same place for the most part. Well, in Milton, but we'll get to that.
We'll
in
get
just
there.
A minute. Irreverent bit that I've got to drop before I forget it. No, I'm sorry, Cody, you go ahead.
Have an irreverent bit, I love irreverent bits, so I can come back.
This is not something I wrote on there, and it's not something that I saw written anywhere else. But am I the only one that realized that Peter's name is also Dick Monkey? Peter Gibbons.
Yes, you are.
And at least the Gibbons part, I feel like, has got to be an inside joke. Because I'm pretty sure he says at one point in time, monkeys could do our jobs. Like, what's happening here? You could just send someone in to type these things in. And the fact that his last name is Gibbons, and they don't reference it very often, but it's that in the credits, and I know the judge says it in his, like, sort of nightmare about what's happening to him. I feel like that's got to... Mike Judge did that on purpose.
I haven't seen that anywhere, but that's... that is a Mike Judge bit. Of course it is. They made it wrote Beavis and Butthead. He probably was doing the voice in his head when he wrote the name on the fucking script.
Man, if you would have told me that the guy that did Beavis and Butthead would go on to do like genuinely interesting and poignant films about the time periods that they take place in, especially and future time periods, that's a movie maybe for another day. I would have called you crazy because I thought Beavis and Butthead was the dumbest, lowest brow humor I had ever seen at that point. That's before I ever saw Ren and Stimpy. I thought I loved Beavis and Butthead, but I also hated it for what it was. But Mike Judge is so incredibly talented.
Yeah, I think that was also his intention with Beavis and Butthead, was this is of the times. In the early 90s, it was not June and Ward Cleaver anymore. It was, let's just reflect who people really are. And Beavis and Butthead were an exaggeration of that, but like,
not
teenagers
much
wanted to... No, yeah, in some cases, in some very sad cases, that was the case. Before we move on to talking about the ending and... where we think it goes from there, for that matter. Who do we need to highlight who we haven't talked about? We've talked about the film in general. Cody, what do you want to talk about? Gary Cole? You want to talk about Steven Root? You want to talk about some quotes, some lesser known people? I can't think of the guy's name, but the guy who plays Tom Smikowski is also phenomenal. You mentioned John C. McGinley. He's great. It's just really an all-star cast.
A brief toward the end of Act 3, get a brief showing from Orlando Jones, who is always a good time.
Oh,
although a couple years from now, he plays the bad movie. I did too. I did too until the scene come up. He's wanting to sell magazines because he's a former crackhead. I'm like, oh shit, it's Orlando Jones.
Except he's not. That's my favorite part of that whole scene, is that he plays it up like he's a crackhead selling magazines, and then he just says, I'm not really a crackhead. I just thought you guys would buy more magazines. That's a great bit. That's hilarious.
I'm a software engineer.
He works the exact same job.
Yep. You talk about Gary Cole. I forget about which, by the way, Richard Reels, Tom Smikowski is great. And the fact that the dialogue of O-Face Guy, which is a bit I still love because I'm fucking 13 in the back of my head.
He improv that bit.
Well, yeah, because in the credits, they have him do the dick roller coaster, or the bone roller coaster.
Right. Like, the boner coaster. Yeah. Oh my God, so good!
You want to talk about stuff, Gary Cole. Specifically, Gary Cole. Do you know what this man did like 4 and 2 years prior to this?
I do, but I don't remember him off the top of my head. Hit me with the facts.
This man was fucking Mike Brady in the Brady Bunch movie, for Christ's sake.
Right. That's right. I knew it was something like not serious, but like taken way more serious.
Very opposite of serious. This man played, because you hit, June Cleaver or whatever earlier. This man played fucking Mike Brady in 2 movies. And played him afterward, by the way, because money's money in Hollywood.
Of course.
You go from that to just this droning, miserable... Oh my God. You want to talk about things that are painfully realistic in this movie. To marry my previous point, just this real quick, because you mentioned going into the 90s, and it's the best decade in terms of fiscal improvement until we hit the dot-com bubble.
Right.
This whole movie screams, because you don't. I think gray comedy fits this well, because it's not a black comedy, it's not a dark comedy, but there is some of that morbid, like, life is on this rock in space is kind of shitty sometimes. You come off of the decade of the 80s that greed is good. you know, you're quoting from Wall Street, Gordon Gekko. Mm-hmm. You come into a movie that is based in the 90s before the dot-com bubble burst that says, oh, greed is good enough for my boss to have a Porsche, to have seven other bosses who do whatever the fuck they do to tell me off about this report cover sheet I didn't put on, GPS reports. It plays well into that cyclical nature, and I'm not going to call like Mike Judge a prophet. We talk about that with Idiocracy and other things. He's very poignantly aware of what's happening in culture, seemingly with the decisions he's made and the art he's created. But I think it does capture some of that minutia of, oh, this is all going to burn down anyway. Like, you know, literally as we go into it, but this is all going to burst in a couple of years, and yet there's all these yes men and all these people who are just fulfilling the same role, milking money, doing nothing beneficial to the people that work for them or for the company for which they work. It hits that microcosm of everything so well. And that's why I love about Gary Cole, just this, yeah, so if you could come Saturday, that'd be great.
One of my favorite bits about his performance is that there's a deleted scene, if you have the DVD, and you said you did, I think it should be on there. There's a deleted scene where Lumberg finds out that, and of course it's Peter, has parked in his parking spot. Now, in the actual movie, that happens, and Lumberg then parks his Porsche in a handicap spot, it gets towed, it's a whole thing. But there's a deleted scene from that sequence where Lumberg comes out and yells at the tow truck guy and gets mad about them yanking the bumper off that. And they cut it specifically because Mike Judge said, or I think it was actually Gary Cole said to him, like, this doesn't fit. This doesn't fit. If you take that out and you go look at everything else that we've done, Lumberg never elevates. And that's what's great about it. Like you said, he is his own kind of nihilist without actually saying so. He never gets above, what's happening? Like, even when he's angry, Peter curves him walking out of the building, and he just goes, all right, that sounds good, Peter, and we'll get someone to fix that for you, right? I mean, it's just
great. I'm trying to think. I don't remember what pill they talked about, but they say that Gary Cole basically played like he was all on a Xanax or something the entire movie. He's the physical embodiment of being on a pill.
Yes, yeah, he's level-headed even when he's being the worst person who could be there. Shannon, I know that you love Stephen Root. What comes to mind for you when it comes to this movie and Stephen Root and the Milton performance?
I think this is one of the most quoted. I mean, you know, even people that have never watched Office Space quote the damn stapler thing all the time.
Yeah, right.
I've never met anyone that didn't know that quote. This is one of those movies that I need to go back and watch again now that I'm in a different level of humor than I was back then. Because when I first saw this movie, and all the times that I've seen this movie, I don't think I appreciate it as much as I should. I think it's a good movie. Yeah. I love it as a comedy. And now looking back on it, it's very much my sense of humor. But at the time, I was more into, you know, again, I was also into the gangster phase and stuff like that. So I didn't get comedies about people in offices being mad at, you know, copy machines. That didn't register on my scale. Stephen Root, who I would later go on to see in, you know, King of the Hill, and he's one of those actors that you kind of see him in everything. He's like Gary Cole, he's like Dick Miller in the 80s. He's like all of these guys that you see in everything, and he always plays someone different, and sometimes I don't even recognize him in the role, even if he looks similar. And this is one of those movies. If you hadn't told me that was Stephen Root, I probably wouldn't have believed that was Stephen Root. Just like there was there was a movie a couple years ago that came out that was pretty good. What was it called? The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, I think it was.
Yes.
Yep. And Stephen Root is in the James Franco segment, and it's another one of those things where I did not recognize that was Stephen Root until I saw the credits. The man's a chameleon. He is such an underrated comedian.
I know you haven't seen much of maybe just clips of Barry, but that is his like latest kind of star-making turnover on HBO, and he does almost the exact same thing there. The character he plays, Fuchs, on that show goes through four or five different elevations or evolutions, I should say, over the course of the show, and yet every time you would go, that's a totally different guy. He puts on a masterclass of this is the same person, but evolving as a person, and yet it's Stephen Root playing every version of that person. It's incredible. He's one of those guys who just blows my mind with that every time that I see him in something. And he's also one of those people, when I see Steven Root's name in the credits, I go, well, I'm going to check that out. Yeah. You got to at least see what's going on there.
Yeah, there are certain people that if I see they're in a film, I will watch it. I mentioned Dick Miller earlier. I'm a huge Dick Miller fan. Yeah. John Glover. John Glover is one of my favorite actors, and I don't think he gets enough respect. And Steven Root's one of those guys. He's a chameleon. The opposite of somebody like, I don't know, Vin Diesel. You see Vin Diesel in a movie, he's Vin Diesel every time.
Right.
But Steven Root can be anybody, and it's amazing.
I mean, so he's part of the reason I love news radio. I'll throw it out there. Show that.
Well, it wasn't Joe Rogan.
Okay, yeah, damn right.
I mean, the 1-2 punch just of Steven Root and Phil Hartman is enough to pay the admission.
Yeah, but then you also have Andy Dick and Joe Rogan.
Andy Dick and Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And then the deciding factor, oh, I'm going to forget his name. He's on Kids in the Hall. He was the main guy.
Dave Foley. Yeah.
Dave Foley, thank you. Oh, my God, it would not come to me. Yeah, he is the one that decides the, let's go check this out because you know this is going to be good. All right, let's talk about the ending, and let's talk about where it goes from there. Now, we said this earlier, Office Space is a movie that actually lends itself really well to not needing a further epilogue because it kind of provides its own. At the end of the movie, Peter, Michael, and Samir have set up the virus that Michael designs to divert a bunch of fractions of pennies into their own bank account. They're going to make off with that and basically bring Enatech down in their own kind of special way. But they start that on the weekend. This is when the famous scene of them destroying the printer happens. On Monday, Peter figures out that the virus didn't work exactly like he wanted it to, and they have accidentally stolen over $300,000. So they're worried they're going to get caught. Peter says he's going to take full responsibility. He writes out a confession. He slips it under Lumberg's door in the office along with some traveler's checks to make up the money without having to, you know, pull it back all out of an account individually. In the process of all this, he has torched his relationship with Joanna, Jennifer Aniston's character, because he was under the impression that she slept with Lumberg. Come to find out, it's not the Bill Lumberg who is his boss. They meet back up. He apologizes. They reconcile. Peter drives up to Enatech the next day thinking he's going to be arrested. But, of course, the building is on fire. All evidence in that era, of course, is destroyed because there's really nowhere else for them to store everything online. He sees Milton at the scene. Milton, of course, throughout the movie has occasionally said, I'm going to set the building on fire. And it looks like he finally made good on that threat. Peter joins up with his buddy Lawrence, his next door neighbor, played by Diedrich Bader, who we totally didn't even have to talk about. Oh, my God. He joins his construction job and decides to get out of the tech business. Samir and Michael are working at Intertrode, which is just another Enatech type place, and they're satisfied trying to put all this behind them. Milton off screen takes the traveler's checks, and then the movie ends with him on vacation in Mexico being mistreated once again. He said he wanted a Mai Tai, Cody, with no salt. And he could call the Board of Tourism and get them shut down. I don't know about you guys. I think I told Shannon this the other day. I have seen this movie so many times. I did not realize that Milton took the traveler's checks.
Yeah.
And that's how he got away. It never occurred to me that that's why he ends up in Mexico, because Peter says he wrote out traveler's checks. So when Milton goes into Lumberg's office, which, by the way, wasn't locked like Peter thought it was.
Yeah.
Because he dives back, he tries to give back or go back on his confession, and then he thinks he can't because the door is shut. That Milton, before he sets things on fire, looks down and sees the traveler's checks and just takes them for himself. It makes total sense, but it never ever occurred to me that that's what happened and that's why he was in Mexico.
For a man that stopped getting paychecks, and that was the way they were going to weasel him out, he found his way back.
That was another thing that I've never listened that carefully to. So this time, again, I was watching it really closely and realizing that they had they had fired Milton, but he kept getting paid. So then the Bobs come in, and McGinley has the best line in this moment where they say, oh, okay, so, you know, we'll just tell him he can leave. Now, hold on there, Buckaroo. We said the problem will work itself out. So they intentionally mean for Milton to keep working and not get paid just so he can pay back what he owes them because they fired. It's a whole mess. It's terrible. We fixed the glitch. It's a really, what I think is a solid ending. It summarizes everything that the movie has been trying to say and trying to do with, some characters are always going to go back to what they know and try to make it work. Some people are going to grow and evolve and become hopefully better people. And some are just going to, you know, fuck off to Mexico with $300,000. beyond this, though, and I'm going to start with Shannon. Shannon, what do you think happens to these characters when the movie ends? Where does it go from there?
I can't remember whether or not we said the F word last week.
It's fine. I mean, we've said it like 16 times.
Yeah. That's my, I quoted Ghetto Boys. That's my fault. I'm
sorry. When it came up, there was no really avoiding it because the movie is built into it.
This episode's going to be rated R. You know?
We can use the rating system.
So this rating system for every
the film was too, so.
Yeah.
I'm a little less optimistic when it comes to things like this. And I'm honestly surprised they never made a sequel and brought some of these characters back in this new digital age and have them, you know, dealing with the cloud and stuff like that. Realistically, I think this isn't funny, but realistically, I think you've got an office building burned down and a former employee who was threatening to burn it down going to Mexico on traveler's checks that he took from a stolen whatever. Like, they're not going to let that...
Milton is definitely a criminal.
Yeah, they're not going to let that go, man. Someone's going to go, okay, well, this building burned down. Now, there's this guy who they haven't been paying, and he said he was going to burn the building down. He's in Mexico now, suddenly, off a bunch of money we don't know how he got. Also, the company's missing this much money. So in my head, in the future, they're all going to jail. Like, they're gonna get Milton. He's gonna flip. He probably read the confession by Ron, the main character.
Peter.
He probably read the confession. He knows what happened. That's why he took the traveler's checks. When they find Milton and go, hey, did you burn down that office building? He's going to immediately go, oh, yeah, I got the checks from this guy. And the whole thing is going to fall apart. I think probably 3 to 4 years after this movie ended, most of those characters were in jail, except for Jennifer Aniston. She went on to become a semi-successful actress. Who was known for a small ensemble comedy role set in a coffee house.
And as they carried Peter and the rest of his friends away, Lawrence was there to wave and say, watch out for your cornhole, man.
Yeah.
Like that.
And then someone in jail was showing him his O fakes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cody, what about you?
Oh, man. I'm of two minds about this in terms of what happens. Okay. Reality and then the movie. Let's start with the movie. Samir and Michael are going to be terminated from Interlope or Penelope or whatever he calls it.
Penelope.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Penelope. Peter makes a penetration joke at the burn down site. I can't remember what it is now. But either way, they're going to get laid off.
Penetrode.
Penetrode.
If I remember correctly. Yeah, Penetrode. And they're like, no, it's Intertrode.
Yeah. They're going to get laid off in 4 to 5 years because that's how that works. They're software engineers. At some point, if they survive everything, they're going to be laid off by AI now in 2023.
Yes.
They will have been secure in their jobs for 24 years. Samir will
Which will be ironic because AI will have actually written the film where they get laid off as well.
God.
And AI actors, if those greedy sons of bitches would take the deal and give their likeness up for $100, stop robbing us of entertainment.
This was a bad idea. Shut it down.
Fairness, Dave Herman worked the first two seasons of Mad TV. He might give his likeness for $100. It's certainly possible.
Oh shit, he was on Mad TV, wasn't he?
He was.
Orlando Jones was on there. I forgot all about David Herman being on there, though. Yeah. Man.
You just forgot about David Herman.
He got himself fired from that job to do this movie.
Yeah, he didn't want to be there. I remember that. He was like, I did not know what the hell I was doing on this show. So he was pitching like goofier and goofier sketches, and they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? See, nowadays, if you do that, you get a show called I Think You Should Leave on Netflix, and you get to do things like the Dormain Doggy Door.
25 years too early.
Yeah.
Shannon, has this ever happened to you?
Call me now, please.
Dave Herman could have been ordering 55 tacos, 55 pizzas, 55...
He's trying to do something.
You might forget that David Herman got his start. Do you remember what he got his start on? What the show was?
No. I just remember Mad TV.
Oh, it was before Mad TV. You don't remember House of Buggin' with John Leguizamo?
Oh, my God. I kind of do. Only vaguely, but I kind of do. By the way, the funniest bit here was going to be if you said that he was the head.
In Herman's head. Well, I was thinking of something funny he said. Yeah, no, legitimately, there was a show on called House of Buggin'. It was John Leguizamo, and I know Luis Guzman was in it, and that's the only two I can remember.
Luis Guzman was in everything, man.
It didn't last long.
No.
It didn't last long.
And like most things he's in, they don't last long.
Unfortunately, they don't make it.
They just don't track.
Yeah.
So, oh my God. So, Cody, what else happens in the end here?
All right.
Those guys get laid off.
Peter eventually wears down from doing construction work because he's building all these nameless buildings that help replace Inatech, and he becomes the thing that he created or tried to leave, and he drives him crazy. Joanna, again, she becomes an associate manager of Flingers. It's fine. She bans Flair if she ever gets hired back by Tchotchkes. Cough, cough, TGI Fridays. Lumberg is in a loveless marriage and dies at the ripe old age of 63 while drinking out of a coffee cup like he did in the sex dream montage, because that's the greatest thing ever for that character. All those things aside, what I want to know, the epilogue I want, is what Mike Judge actually wanted for Act 3. Because if you read in the oral history and a couple other things, he talks about in the final test screening, he had an epiphany of like, oh, I know what I want Act 3 to be. It would be completely different. But I have not found a source to this point where he says what Act 3 would be.
This movie was covered pretty extensively in Best Movie Year Ever, too. And they mentioned the same thing without giving a resolution. So I don't know either.
I don't know that he's ever said it publicly, which is the damnedest thing.
Sometimes I think that's better, though, because if you remember, Ghostbusters was originally going to be something completely different as someone reined them in. Yeah, and maybe it's for the best.
I think I might be a little more optimistic than you guys, although I had a lot of the same ideas to some degree as both of you. Number one, I think rather than an actual epilogue, I want a sequel. Right, I think there should be some form of sequel. It's never going to be as good as the original, but I like Super Troopers too, just as much as the next guy who actually got to see it. Not as good as the first one, like most things aren't, but I think a sequel is not a terrible idea, and I also think it's probably a pretty good idea to. Oh my God, there's House bugging. I think it's also a good idea to do it now in a very different era than 1999. Right, these guys would have similar and yet very different jobs. So my thought is that whatever the new film centers on, it's a new cast, but we're going to tie back into those old characters with cameos or at least extended appearances. So I also tend to agree that Samir and Michael got laid off, only now they're probably the heads of some new type of that of company like that.
That makes sense.
to some degree. They might even like be your Google types. Like, they're the ones who have gone on to actually create something worthwhile, and so they have the fun workplace, but even they know that it's bullshit. Yeah. I love the idea that Peter is not only like making those same kinds of buildings, but that he's the new Lawrence, that Peter is now the neighbor of one of the guys who's the one of the new stars and kind of doing the same thing. One guy told me a long time ago what he'd do with $1 million. I love the idea of him passing that line on. Milton should be seen even less, but I like Shannon's idea, only make it a running gag. So the background, occasionally you see that there's like a manhunt out for this guy. the news headlines get progressively crazier as to where he is and what he's doing. And honestly, I think Lumberg is the only one I don't know what to do with, but I think you've got to bring him back. You've still got Gary Cole around. You got to do something with him. So maybe he's an after credits tease. Whatever happens to the stars of the new film, at the end, they go to work at a new job, and you just hear someone say, "Hey, just watch out for the head honcho or whatever." Like, what are you talking about? And you just hear from off screen, "Hey, fellas, what's happening?" And then it just ends. It's disturbingly funny to me. I don't know. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now. So
I love that. It's a quick horror cut. That's like a perfect
right. film cut off. There would absolutely be an orchestra strike at that moment, or like a little orchestra that goes zip up to the end. Yeah, totally. Right at the end of the credits. Did we do it? I think we did it. Did we do it, guys?
Yeah, we did it. I think we did it.
All right. Cool.
We handled Hunter, the mundane task. We put the decimal point in the right spot. We're not going to prison. It's fine.
Hunter, we still have 12 more minutes.
We have 12 more minutes? All right, Cody.
And I'll start one. Riff. I had to look up because it was bothering me. Scarface is the rapper for that first song at the beginning of the movie, not Tupac. Oh, okay. Though it very much sounded like Tupac because I thought it was while I was watching it again.
Well, the line, "I can't talk to my mother, so I talk to my diary," I would have 100% assumed was Tupac for the rest of my life.
For the record, I mean, you could always... Scarface and Tupac did one of my favorite rap songs together, Cody. Do you remember it?
No, I'm waiting for you to say it, because I'm sitting here trying to think off the top of my head.
Smile. Smile for me. Good song. Good song. Scarface. Very, when you talk about the, you know, great rappers in history, people leave Scarface out a lot. I think that's a mistake. That's
true. Well, I mean, it was perfect because he was a part of the Ghetto Boys, which I love. Of all the things, again, I highly recommend it. Maybe we may throw it in the description of the podcast episode. The Ringer did an oral history of this film, talking to a lot of people, Mike Judge, all of them. One of the people they interview extensively is Willie D from Ghetto Boys, who, one, loves this being in the movie, like, two, says that Mike Judge is batting 1,000 in terms of comedy, so if he's fighting for something to be in a movie, you better let him do it, because it makes sense. And also goes on at the end, and again, talk about dichotomies, this person who is one of the main figures of a prominent 90s rap group talking about the fact he can't relate and doesn't understand and would never do a job where it's 9 to 5, grind you to death inside. I'm like, yes, okay. So you have lived your life to avoid that, and you have been memorialized and immortalized in a scene trying to avoid that.
You know,
things come full circle.
It's perfect.
I said last week that Evil Dead to me is one of the maybe the only horror franchise that has never put out a bad product. I'm trying to think if Mike Judge has ever put anything out that I didn't like.
I can't think of anything that didn't work. He released a movie that was kind of not well received and was kind of a spiritual successor to Office Space, which we didn't talk about. Have either of you ever seen Extract?
Heard of it. Kunis? Never seen
Jason Bateman. I haven't Jason seen it, Bateman. I know of it, yeah. And that's what I've heard, is that it's kind of a follow-up for spiritual
stuff. I have, and I remember nothing about it. That basically it was Office Space, but not as good. I wouldn't call that a bad product, because even a not as great Office Space is still funny. And as I recall, I laughed. I just didn't think it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. But I have to feel like that's probably his low point. And it came out after this. This hit big on DVD, and they gave him a chance to do something similar, and Extract just it's set in like a vanilla extract plant is why it's called that, right. And I don't remember a thing about the plot. All I know is that it is kind of like this, of a guy who's unsatisfied with the way things are going, and it just kind of it just kind of falls flat. It's not as good. So it just sort of is what it is.
Yeah, because you talk about, obviously, King of the Hill, batting 1,000 there, well, later seasons to maybe be talked about, but either way, he did Idiocracy, which I'm not quite as high up on it being prophetic and like it's the description of the future as all some people tend to be with that movie, but I do enjoy the movie. Beavis and Butthead Do America and Do the Universe are good times to be had by all. Yeah, I think kind of looking through it, I don't know if there's something that screams out explicitly as like a big whiff.
Yeah, even Beavis and Butthead had its moments of not being as, you know, they brought it back 2 or 3 different times, and it's never as good as the original. But at the same time, I don't know that it ever.
It's still.
I don't know that it ever got bad. Yeah, right. The only time that I was disappointed with Beavis and Butthead, and this is funny, when I was a kid, I didn't care anything about the music videos. I just wanted to watch the shorts.
Right.
I have completely flipped on that.
Yeah, after the music videos are where it's at. Yeah.
The video is what's hilarious about it, especially
so cold,
and I didn't know if it would work. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know if it would work, but like when I was younger, of course, it was all MTV videos, because that's the reason they were on MTV. When they did the newer ones and they started pulling like viral videos, I thought, I don't know if this is going to play, but it makes perfect sense. If they're still teenagers in this era, that's what they're going to be watching. They're not watching music videos. Nobody even makes music videos anymore.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to be watching that.
I feel bad.
Their version of It's So Cold in the D is just good luck getting that out of your head.
I hope they do one of my favorite songs going right now, one that's been unfairly cast aside, is Jason Aldean's Try That in a Small Town.
I was listening to a podcast today talking about it.
I have at least 3 motherfuckers of the week at this point, and he is right up there on the list as a spoiler.
Well, let's try that shit in a small town.
Shannon, I assumed that you were going to say, I hope that they cover that song that you really like. It goes like Palm Tree Girls.
Palm Tree Guys. I do like that one.
Don't give it to him. Just let me think.
Cody, you ever heard that one song? It goes like Moon River Rock. Moon River Roll.
Okay. Two things just real quick. One, just
to get my thoughts on quickly. Take time. It's thermal time.
Jesus.
That's why you gotta do it quick. It's thermal time.
So one thing, talking about Mike Judge not missing, we get an equivalent, not a sequel to Office Space, but something akin to that in terms of technology, Silicon Valley. How have we not mentioned Silicon Valley yet?
Yeah, also written by
Judge,
right?
I did not know that was a Mike Judge.
Yeah,
that's Mike Judge.
Product. Yep.
What?
Yep.
I don't know this. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's very good in terms of, like, you talk about the parodying, or not even really parodying, really showing what an office feels like because it's the doldrums of the dead, you know, all of that. Right. Silicon Valley does a great job of that from tech startup, from what I understand. That's one thing that I don't have experience in other than being behind the screen and helping people. But I will say it's a great show. I enjoy it because it's got Kumail Nanjiani, TJ Miller before he became really problematic, Jimmy O. Wang, or Yang, excuse me, who I fucking love him in Space Force 2.
I thought you said Jimmy Wang Yang there for a second.
I did. Wang Yang. That's what I heard.
He's a good wrestler.
We're the only three people listening to this right now who assumed that's where he was going.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Yes, they're all three standing here. The fans of 2006 SmackDown. I'm very glad we're all here together, guys.
There's a movie I've mentioned on the show before that it's not the same, but it has a similar tone of guy stuck in a dead-end job he hates, that life has kind of gone past him, except it takes a much different turn. I want to mention it again in case people haven't watched it. It's called Swimming with Sharks. It's 94, 95. And I know it's problematic to say his name, but Kevin Spacey, for all the things, he's a brilliant actor. He's fantastic in this. Frank Whaley, Michelle Forbes, I believe. It's such a good movie. And if you like Office Space and you like that nihilistic American, dream sucks humor or whatever, I think you would like it.
Okay. I'll have to look that up because you talked about the dark version of it. I thought you were going to say Falling Down with Michael Douglas.
Man, that's another movie I need to go rewatch because
let's be honest, Milton is the guy from Falling Down, just played for your yucks in a weird voice.
Plays laughs.
Sincerely, you guys nailed it. He goes to prison because he's Michael Douglas from Falling Down.
Right. I'm pretty sure Falling Down is a movie about a white guy who gets upset that his burger didn't look as good as the picture, and then he goes on a killing rampage. And I remember he was the protagonist. He's the one that you were supposed to support.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh.
That is what happened.
That is, you nailed it.
All the times they are changing. Oh, man. All right. I think we've done it.
Yeah.
Guys, first of all, thank you to Cody for being here. I said it.
How do you like us now?
And thank you for other Cody for being here. I said at the top of the episode, and I mean it, when we first landed on Office Space last week, immediately we went, and we'll get Cody.
Yep.
To this day, I cannot tell you exactly what prompted that specific response, but we both knew intrinsically that Cody was the right person. So, Cody, thank you for coming on the show tonight to talk about Office Space with us.
Thank you for having me for one of my favorite movies. I will just note, I can't wait to come back when we finally make it to Fear of a Black Hat, because that's probably the only other thing. When we get there,
We will certainly
one of my
have you
favorite
back
movies.
In the future.
Yeah, once we get done with the list, then I'm going to make my own list.
To be fair, I was going to say, we don't have to do the list every week. I mean, we can just work through it in time because, Shannon, that's where I was going to head next. What are we doing next week? You threw it to me last week. I'm throwing it to you this week.
Oh, man. I didn't expect that.
The Chaperone starring Triple H.
I have watched that legitimately for the record.
Really?
Yeah,
I think we all saw some version of this.
I have not. I can say I have avoided it.
I was trying to think of a movie that we could do that we could get Lindsay on, let her run her mouth for a little bit because she's excited. Well, about it. She loved this show. She listened to the first.
If you want to do 99 stuff, I can just I've got the list pulled up. I can just read them and then you stop me when you like something.
You tell me when we get something that Lindsay's definitely watched.
Okay, so my immediate thought then is that because we were, and not to super stereotype, but you were saying that like the sort of romantic comedies of that era, she probably would know. So I'm looking right at things like She's All That, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Wait, let's do that. She talks about that
I hate about you
all the fucking time. She will be thrilled to do, and she'll have to host
decision
that one
because
I sure as hell don't remember that movie. Other than
I've seen it several times, but I'll have to watch it again.
I called the lead actress Baraka because of her teeth. And she looked like she
Are
looked
you
like
Julia Stiles.
Yes, back in those days, I know something about her mouth that drove me crazy.
Oh my God! Her name is Melina.
Terrible!
Damn it! You're a Mortal Kombat fan. Get it right.
Well, it's just a female Baraka. It's the same thing.
Yes, but still.
I regret it now. Man. I like Julia Stiles, but back then I was like, "Oh, why you got Mealy Mouth on there? I don't want her. I want Rachel Lee Cook or."
Oh my God,
Sarah Michelle Gellar. I want a girl with three names. God damn it!
So 1999's 10 Things I Hate About You then will be the film next week for Extras and Epilogues. We're not done with this week, Shannon. What are we doing tomorrow night?
Well, we do have an all-new After Dark with an all-new top five from Lindsay. That's it. To be fair, there's a lot of things going on. I don't know how much we'll get to talk about unless tomorrow's top five is top five stories we should talk about on Podzilla After Dark, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm upset about a lot of things. I'm upset about Hulu. I'm upset about Jason Aldean.
You're coming in hot.
I'm coming in hot. Big time. Yeah. Is there time for horses this week or no?
They would be late horses, but we've done late horses before, so I say go for it. Let's horse it up.
We'll talk to the stable masters.
Grab us a fresh bottle of horse ranch, throw it on some horseradish, and some horse cheese.
And then, Cody, we are back next Tuesday with PZ85 Plays, right?
Yes, barring catastrophe and or Strahd just off-screen offing everybody like we've just predicted for all these characters in this movie, we should be good.
Negative. Cody, I will message you here in the next day or two.
Okay. Ooh. Yeah, we'll talk. We'll all three probably talk.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff coming up between now and next Wednesday. And then, yes, next Wednesday, another weekly installment of Extras and Epilogues. We'll be talking about 10 Things I Hate About You. We're going to bring Lindsay in for that one. That's going to be great.
Support Blizzard. They did nothing wrong.
You have to stop for now. For Cody and for Shannon, I'm Double H. The balcony is closed, and thank you for listening.